Yeah, I know, yes. I didn't him. I mean, the brother of the Ichthyosaurus beetles.
Goes something like this. This is the 8th of February, 1994, and I'm in Headington House in the library.
No.
No, I'm library. Not in the library. What no. am I in?
The TV room.
I'm in the TV room. In fact, I'm Isaiah is sitting beside the TV room in a brown...
Yes. Brown woolen suit.
Brown woolen suit. A very great distinction. It's a very nice brown polished Oxford. And we are going to talk about the spies, if that's okay with you.
Perfect.
The first one you meet is Burgess.
Yes.
When do you recall first meeting him?
Yeah, I'm not good on dates. He was then an undergraduate at Cambridge. He's about 2 or 3 years younger than me. Therefore, it must have been, I should guess, 1934? 1935, I think probably 4.
That is, you have a memory of already being at All Souls.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I mean, also some time.
Yeah.
Certainly. And he, how did I meet him, I can tell you.
Yeah.
He was a bright young man at Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And a particular friend of Lady Ryland's, who was a famous English tutor. In Cambridge was a very sort of Bloomsbury figure.
Yes.
In Cambridge, and connected with it, in love with Virginia Woolf. As you just said, famous English tutor.
Yes.
He's still alive.
Yes.
91 or 2.
I remember Danny from King's.
That's right. Well, and you know who he is. He was a great friend of Maurice Barra. And no doubt when bright young men appeared at either of their tables, they passed them on to each other.
Yes.
They must have come with a recommendation from Danny.
Right.
He knew Keynes, he knew Forster, he knew all the King's lights. He was, I didn't know it, he was 100% homosexual, and he was very bright. And I met him at lunch, but I had no idea who he was. But he was extremely agreeable to talk to, intelligent, amusing, and we made friends at lunch. I sat next to him, and I thought he was very agreeable to talk to.
Yes.
We talked about books, we talked about people,
yes.
And I thought he was one of the, I liked him. That was the end of it.
Did you sense immediately that he was homosexual?
No. I never knew that about anybody. I had to be told. And no, I did not. Nor anything else in particular. Certainly not left wing.
Because Garanwy Rees's memory of Burgess was that he knew he was homosexual from the very first moment. They were alone together, as it were, because he made a slight pass.
Well, of course. No pass was ever made at me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say. It's rather... I feel rather insulted. No homosexual. Ever made a part of me.
Yes.
Rather shocking, I think.
Yes.
It doesn't say much for me. But anyway, no, he didn't do it.
Why do you think that is? Because you gave off such stern,
oh, no.
Moral...
Oh, no, physically unattractive. Simply, truth is perfectly simple. Nothing to do being stern.
Yes.
Mind you, homosexuals always know each other.
Yes.
When they meet. Garanwy was not
homosexual.
He was what was called a Maribara. Normally sex pansy. Means he liked women, and homosexual women liked him. And occasionally, out of politeness, he probably went to bed with them.
Yes.
But he wasn't really homosexual.
Yes.
Didn't do it regularly or any, with any particular pleasure.
Yes.
But occasionally, he allowed himself anyway.
You've had lunch with Guy Burgess?
Lunch with Waldem.
At Wadham with
the Dean of Wadham,
yeah.
Which he then was.
Yeah.
And that was it. I vaguely remember the lunch at all.
Yeah.
I just remember that it happened.
Yeah.
After which, I don't think I ever met him. No, I think then. I next met him at lunch with the late Lord Rothschild.
Victor.
In Cambridge, yes.
Yeah.
Victor. In, what is it called? I was in Cambridge. I met Victor in 1932, and we made friends, and I used to go and stay with him.
Yes.
He married his first wife. What was that called? Merton Hall.
Yes.
or Pythagoras, it was also called for some reason, shaped like that. And he was there, and by that time, I rather think that Blanche was there too, and I did the Rylance. So I swam again, and again thought he was very graceful and took on to another, cozy in a way, and very jolly, and I took to him rather. Then he would come talk. Then after that he
What was it you liked about him exactly, just beyond quickness? Was there any... charm,
cleverness, and agreeable, and sort of bright, to agreeable, bright, intelligent talk with books about people, particularly these distinguished people. His descriptions of Keynes or of Forster were amusing to listen to.
Yes.
And he was bright in the sense that you could discuss anything. I've never talked about politics in all my life. Never. Which is startling, but true. So I never knew...
It is startling. Why?
Because he was a notorious communist. I never knew he was a communist.
No, wait, he was a notorious communist, and then you said you never knew he was one.
No, exactly. Notorious, retrospectively.
But not at the time.
Not known to me. Everyone else knew. When I say notorious, nobody didn't know, except me.
Yeah.
I knew he was left wing. I knew he was obviously strongly left center. I mean, a young left wing Cambridge undergraduate, which was normal. Well, as there was I in a way. I mean, anti-Franco and so on, I packed parcels with Spain, quite enthusiastically. But I didn't feel him to be someone special left wing. I never knew he was a member of the party. I don't know if I even knew him to be Marxist. I think that's false. I think he did talk to me. Not about Marx. Used one or two Marxist phrases.
Yes.
Yes. But I mean, not specially. Not more than lots of others, what I mean. And when he escaped, I was totally surprised. I mean, and not only did I not know his agent, but I had no suspicion of his being a member of the party.
Yes.
Though most people did.
Yes.
Only
but
I
that's
didn't.
Getting ahead. Now,
only I did.
When did
well, then,
you meet him
come?
Victor Rothschild, so you spend a weekend together at the Murphy?
No, I did, but he just came
and
to a meal. No, he wasn't. He was in Cambridge, I mean. Then I heard about him. He didn't get a proper degree. He couldn't write. He could never write anything.
Yes.
So he got
an agri-type degree.
He did. Foreign Office, then I got that wrong. When the speech made about the House of Commons, not run by whom, which I think Macmillan, they said he got a first. Not so. He got an agri-type, and then he rang me up, say, about once. Year maybe,
yes.
Maybe twice every 3 years, I mean,
yes.
In long intervals,
yes.
Saying, this guy, I'm at Oxford, are you doing anything this evening? No. Can I come and see you after dinner? Yes. Can I bring my Swedish friend? By that time I knew.
Yes.
I would say, no, I don't want to see you, your Swedish friend. Leave him behind with the mitre.
Yes.
He would then come, at about 9, I would supply a bottle of whiskey. He would drink the whole thing, slowly.
Did he come drunk, or did he come...
No, he came sober. Mm.
And did he look disordered, or did
No, he looked as he always looked. He was rather ill-dressed, slightly disheveled, that he was. I never knew about his eating garlic, which everyone else complained of. Maybe my olfactory sense is rather weak.
Yeah.
And I never... And no, he wasn't drunk. No, he was just a... Bit, I mean, not exactly a tramp. Some people were herbal. I mean, he was obviously an adventurer of some sort. I realized that then.
Yes.
But very agreeable, very amusing. And we would then drink his whiskey and then we talk.
And he would be then, at that period, would have been working for the BBC in London?
No.
Or for films?
No. His first visit to me, when he was doing his city letter.
His what?
The city letter. Advising on stocks and shares, various persons who wish to invest.
Including the Rothschilds?
Victor's mother.
Including Victor's mother.
She apparently took his letter. I never saw the letter. It wasn't sent to me.
Yes.
Naturally. Where he got his information from, I don't know, but I now think communist agents in Argentina, Mexico,
yes.
He must have got information from old friends. That didn't last very long. Then he would turn up, we would talk from 9 o'clock up at 9 till midnight. He would gradually become more and more fuzzled, let's say in those days, drunk. And then I would find him, and then he would say, have you got a bed? I'd find him a bed, and then by...
And where would that be? That would
next
be
door.
Somewhere in the college?
My room in the college. Next door by 7 a.m. he'd be gone. Long before I got up.
Yes.
What did we talk about? Never politics, which now seems to be astonishing. Literature. Books. By contrary, I think, was the man who wrote Companion to English Literature in the 17th, 18th centuries, with a friend of his. We talk about all the compendia, the articles in his book. We talk about Forster, we talk about novels, George Eliot.
Yes.
I can't remember at all.
Any Russian books? Did you talk about Turgenev?
No, he wasn't
there. There's no Russian slam.
No, none at all. None at all. No, he never liked Russians. Didn't when he was in Moscow either. Yeah. No, never. No entirely English.
No.
No French, no German. We talk about people we knew. I mean, and talk about our private lives.
Yeah.
It's gossip. Very agreeable gossip. Not very serious, but exhilarating.
Yes.
Then a year would pass, or a year and a half would pass, and ring up again, same thing would happen again.
Yes.
At that level, one could know him quite comfortably. The idea, even then, of giving him a serious post seemed mad to me.
Yes.
I didn't think he would be, but I mean, nobody ever suggested. He moved on from the City Letter. No, sorry, I'm getting it wrong. I didn't think I knew him. The first job he had after Trinity was in the Conservative Central Office. That was never admitted by anybody, but I happen to know. His colleagues were a man called Stannard, whose real name was Steinhardt, whom I knew nothing about, and Lord Longford, then Frank Pakenham, who was a Conservative Sinn Féin. Pro-Sinn Féin, and a very stout member of the Conservative Party, who then became a Donald Oxford.
Yes.
But he was in the Central Office. When I mentioned these things to Frank Longford, not best pleased, didn't want to go on talking about it. No doubt the truth. He was caught up with, I think, though he's the head of the office, was a man called Neville Chamberlain. He was obviously planted.
Yes.
But how could I know that?
Yes.
So that's his first job.
What is this? Is 34, 35?
33.
The
34, well, very early.
Yes.
All right. 34, 35. When, I don't know when he took schools. Must have been 35, 36. Mid-30s.
Yeah.
I can't tell exactly what dates. Anyway, the first job was the Conservative. I think he was caught up in some way. That didn't last. I think he must have got rid of it for drunkenness or telling lies or something.
Yes.
There's usual reason.
Yeah.
Then he started the City Letter.
Yes.
And after that, maybe simultaneous. And then he began working for a man called Captain Plug, Member of Parliament, Conservative, who I think had shared in around Radio Luxembourg. Nothing to do with BBC. Till after war.
Yes. I
see. Never, as far as I know, nothing before the war.
Yes.
Then I really knocked about, got money wherever he could. I never knew exactly what he was doing.
Yes.
He used to tell me now and then, didn't listen very much.
Yes.
Well, he used to come and, as they dropped in, say twice before the war, maybe three times. And then I remember...
And then there are letters, because in your incoming correspondence, there are letters from guys saying, I've been involved in my usual orgies in Soho, and then I retired to some suburb to recover, that kind of thing.
Well, I knew he was a... But I knew he was altruistic. I knew he was homosexual by then. No question. Swedish friend, yes. And then I remember very well an extraordinary evening which was given by Felix Frankfurter, who was the Eastman visiting professor in Oxford. That must have been 34. And this was an evening, I think maybe something like what's the famous American festival happens in the autumn.
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. And he gave a dinner party. Frankfurt.
Marion and Felix would have given a party.
Marion and Felix, yes. They were here, and they gave a dinner party, and they came to it. Maurice Barra, Roy Harold, Sylvester Gates, who was a great friend of mine, who was then a lawyer in London, who had been a pupil of Felix's in the Harvard Law School, and met and became a great friend of Edmund Wilson at that time. And then came Garonway, because Felix must have met him somewhere, liked him, and I don't think it was me, I think it was he brought Guy Burgess with him.
Garonway did.
I think so. At that time. I think they became friends as early as that. And we had a very jolly dinner, and there was a discussion, and Freddie and everyone got rather drunk, except me.
You never got drunk?
Once in my life. I wish to hear about that. You want me to interpolate that?
Sometime we better, yes.
Whenever you would like, I can give you...
Perhaps you should interpolate it briefly now.
Nothing is very great. It's not a very long story. I never really touched drink because it disagreed with me. But, I mean, it made me ill long. I couldn't sleep after and so on. I didn't know why, but also. So I didn't drink it on credit. One day I was sitting, of course, at somebody's party on the floor in summer. And we drank fruit cup, which didn't feel like alcohol. There's a lot of rum, I think, in it. Maybe gin. I drank 2 glasses of it. I didn't feel anything. And then I smoked a pipe in those days. I got up in order to get a box of matches from the mantelpiece. I found I couldn't get the place in the mantelpiece. I couldn't get the hose, went somewhere else. By that time I knew I was drunk. I wasn't so drunk as not to know.
Yes.
I kept veering away from the mantelpiece. I couldn't walk straight. Well, I thought perhaps that I sat down again, so I better leave the party. I was having dinner with Garonway in the George restaurant, which was a smart restaurant that evening. The party was about 6. At about 7, I suppose, half past 7, I must have got up and trotted out of the room. I don't remember tottering, but I must have done. I wore a hat in those days, even then. And as I walked down the high street, I bumped into people. Every time I bumped, I remember very well, I gave elaborate apologies with drunkards of my kind. Saying, dear madam, I would never have dreamt of bumping you had I had any control of my body. I assure you, I do hope you will not rethink it, an offensive act on my part. I fear I am not fully in control of my body, otherwise this wouldn't have happened. I went there apologizing in a very verbose, elaborate, courteous way. They all looked at me as I was mad and gave me a wide berth. I got as far as the George, successfully, and I sat at a table, around the opposite. I couldn't see him. Great wall of darkness stretched between us. So then I drank about 2 gallons of water. After the darkness disappeared, I was perfectly sober and terribly depressed. And then went to bed. And I never drank again. Now back to Burgess. Now, this dinner party of Frankfurters. Why am I telling you that? Because on that occasion, there was a dispute about whether Wittgenstein had said, we're off, one cannot speak, one must be silent. So it was said once or twice in the Tractatus. And Freddie said once. And Sylvester Gates said twice. And Burgess said, I don't know what it means. He didn't volunteer. And he was very new today. His friends talked about it. We had long dispute.
And did you have an opinion on this question?
No, none. I didn't know what it was. No, I didn't.
Because you hadn't read the Tractatus at that point?
I didn't think, if I did, I didn't know. I hadn't. In the end, Sylvester Gates proved to be right. Yeah, I was wrong. Said in the introduction, again in the text. That I remember. I don't know, we just drank they held the various persons, and so on. And we all got up and drank health of Justice Holmes, and you're 90 at that time, and that kind of thing. But I remember going on Burgess there because he somehow didn't really belong to that party. He was very friendly with everybody, and they all liked him. And he was sort of one of us, very much. And Miss there, Renee, also got all drunk on that occasion. And then, as I think, would drop in these infrequent intervals. And then I heard, in about 1937, they joined a thing, someone told me, a thing called Britannia Youth, which was an organization founded by the mayor of Hove, wherever he was, I never knew, but to take some English schoolboys from Nuremberg for the Parteitag. The straight pro-Nazi outfit. Of course, he'd planted on that too. But I took it as becoming fascist. Because I couldn't know him. Mind you, he never came to see me then. There's no effort in this point. So I didn't have to avoid him more. But I thought, well, he's mad. He never had a moral basis to his life. The one thing that was clear to me was the fact that he was a man with no moral basis for his life whatever. Not any. He was agreeable and to know and everything. Moral basis, no. I never heard of any remark which, so to speak, entailed moral judgments. It was social, personal, aesthetic. Never. Never said somebody was very dishonest or a scoundrel or whatever it might be, hypocrite. None of this.
But that didn't stop you liking him?
No. He was such a agreeable company. We were friends. I liked anybody whom I felt sort of exhilarated by all my life, I mean, true. Now, what happened then was I didn't see him, and that was it. Now, no more about him. The next meeting was more dramatic. That happened, not dramatic, but you'll see, different. It happened in June 1940. Now, the war had already got into a hot phase. I was at Oxford, teaching, and did examining in PPE. I was not offered the job by the government because I was born abroad and that wasn't allowed.
Seen that in your correspondence. I've seen that. Did it rankle that you were born an alien?
No, it didn't rankle one moment. I was sorry they wouldn't offer me one because all my friends were in government departments. There was a war on, and I would have liked to be. The fact that I wasn't appointed, I rather regret. I was sorry.
Yes.
I was not exactly irritated, but rather sad about that. I minded. We say I minded, but not minded being a foreigner. I didn't feel it made me more foreign than I'd been before. And then I remember I had a friend in the Department of Education who did offer me a job, and I accepted it. And no, I don't think I did accept it. I went to Fisher, who was warden of New College. That I've been offered this rather lowly post. No, he said, don't. More use here. No, that's too much. In the end, I got a letter from my friend saying no good, he couldn't have given it. Because they looked into me, I was born in Riga, no good. There's nothing else against me except foreign birth. And I think on the whole this is true for most people who are born abroad. I think it may have been relaxed because of the war. But anyhow, in 1940. Well then, there was a tap on my door in your college. I was sitting in a rather depressed state because the war was going so badly. And that was about the time when I read my paper in Cambridge, which I think I've told you about.
The one in front of Wittgenstein?
Yes. Not rather then. The back of Cambridge. Tap on the door. As you know, dons are like prostitutes. Doors are not locked. Except deliberately. By oaks. And the man came in to the virgin. He said, look, we've not met for some time. I know what you would think of me.
Meaning?
What?
Meaning?
I know you would think, I know you heard that I was a member of this pro-Nazi group. You must despise me and loathe me, and I can imagine what your feelings are. But of course, I'm terribly unstable. It suddenly came over me this. I suddenly thought, Everything in England is very dreary, and you know, the Liberal Party didn't exist. Labour Party was totally useless and dull. The Conservatives are a bit better than that, a little bit tougher. I rather respect them, in a way. But I thought at least the Nazis knew where they were going. It was real. They were doing something. It was something, I mean, modern and new. Anyway, chatted away like this. Anyway, I don't expect you to forgive me or anything else. I've come on quite a different errand. What is it? He said, let me tell you, I'm now in the intelligence. I'm in whatever it is called, MI6. I'll tell you how that happened too. I'm in touch with all kinds of people. Among other people, Harold Nicholson, a great friend of mine. He's, as you know, in the Ministry of Innovation, was number two. And that time he's MP. The head of it was then Dov Cooper. He wants to know if you would agree to become press attaché to Moscow. Because you know Russian, and they think it might be rather useful. Nobody there speaks any Russian. Cripps doesn't know the language. Nobody there knows anything. So I said, well, I'd take any post the government offered me. I mean, I didn't know what to say. But I must say, I think it's something a little peculiar about this job. The idea of getting bits of British propaganda into Pravda during the Russo-German Pact does seem to me rather eccentric. Yes. You know what, never mind. Go and talk to Harold.
But just to make it clear, Burgess is saying the idea is coming from Harold.
Yes.
When in fact the idea comes from Burgess.
Yes. As one could infer later.
Yes.
At the time, though, no. I did not say it. No. Nothing to do with intelligence.
But was that your reaction at the time, that it was an attractive but deeply implausible post?
Yes.
That's what you said at the time?
To him.
Yes.
And then went to see Alan Nicholson and said all this. He was sitting in the Senate House of London University, which is where the Ministry of Information was. And he said, oh, well, yes, Guy, you know, but this from Guy, of course. It's a really good idea. I think it's a really good idea. You know the language well. And I said, but press attaché, I mean, being attached to the Soviet press. No, no, well, never mind. Then none of them know Russian. You'll be very useful there. There aren't many Russian speakers. I'm sure you'll be awfully good. I think it's a rather good idea. And I could see he got it from Guy, but he didn't say that. Now, I can't appoint you because it has been done jointly with the Foreign Office. So would you mind going to see a rather good-looking young man, handsome young man, called Gladwin Jones? He's the private secretary of the Permanent Undersecretary Erica Duggan. And they can talk to him about it. Then we can have a joint appointment. Well, off I went.
This is June 40 still.
Late June. Off I went. Early July, not late June. Off I went to see a good looking young man I never met before, who later became a friend of. And he said, Harold talked to me about this. It's a totally good idea. Now look, we can't send you by Norwegian tramp to Russia because they're all sunk these days. There are two ways of going. One is via South Africa and Persia. The other is via America and Japan. Which do you prefer? Very business-like, risk. I didn't ask what I was doing or anything of that sort. They're all fixed up. They knew what they were doing. I said, well, it's all the same to you. I think I'd rather go through America and Japan. I don't at least want to see South Africa. And I didn't all that much. Want to go through Japan. Okay, we'll fix that up. Right. Now, look, only one thing I forgot to add. Guy is going with you, if you don't mind. He's got his own stuff to do. Nothing to do with you. I mean, you know, he's in an office who does that kind of thing. You needn't know anything about it, whatever. But you'll both be carrying bags. Diplomatic bags. That's the best way of doing it. So then he said, I'll get you a visa. A Soviet visa from all the necessary visas. I don't care, I'll fix that up. I think his office is probably better than that. And we could do it. So I said, well, what kind of visa? I think I need a diplomatic visa, something special. I was born in Riga. And I'm not sure that I'd be really safe. The Soviet Union, because there is a clause by being naturalized, that your country of naturalization can't protect you in the country of origin. Officially. He said, oh well, yes. All right, well, no, I can't really agree. Maisky gave a visa to Boston.
Oh, really?
But he was stopped in Romania and couldn't go on. Same sort of reason as you. No, no, man in Washington's a man. He's very much in with them. Michael Umansky. I think he must have been in the Chekhov somewhere. His visas work. All right, I heard all this through some, I mean, it's all new to me and really befuddling. I knew nothing about any of these things. So I said, all right, I'll do anything you tell me. I behaved in my usual and very specific, obedient and self-adjusted fashion. It's true of me in general. Anxiety to please. So that was it. Then Guy said, oh, one thing, yes.
Did Guy come with you when you went with...
No, no.
This is solo.
No, no, sir. Then he said, well, we'll fix that up. I saw him again, I was at lunchroom or something. And he said, no, let's see. What are we going to do? Your passport. I think I can arrange that one. Forgive me your passport. I can get the visas all right. My office can look after it. They're all forged. I knew. And these bags you have to carry makes it a bit better for us. Safer. I don't know what they'll contain. Stones. Empty bottles, I think.
Is that what he said?
It's very typical of the yes.
Yeah.
We'll sail on a... There's a boat going. I called the Antonia. Cunard boat. About 15,000 tons. From Liverpool to Quebec. That's what we're going in. Meanwhile, I think I'd rather like to take you to see my called Colonel Grand. Colonel Grand was a man of the intelligence. I didn't know why I had to go and see him. But I did. And Colonel Grand was a very stupid man. He said, oh, well, you're going off to Russia with a guy here. You know, a lot of business to be done there. The Achilles heel of these people is, of course, the Caucasus. That's where the oil comes from. If we can hit them there, that'd be much more useful to us than anything else. We don't talk about appear to be total nonsense. However, that didn't last very long. And that was just an episode. Well, I tell my parents, tell various other people. I always felt it was a bit queer, this whole thing. It wasn't irregular. I mean, I didn't think...
What was it about it that struck you as being irregular?
The fact that I was being sent to Moscow as a presidency, because I didn't think it was a real post.
Yes.
Now, why was I being sent? What would I do when I got there?
Did you stop and examine your motives at any time and ask yourself why it is that Burgess disappears and then reappears and he has this fascist...
No. Never.
None of that struck
no, well,
you as
I,
peculiar.
I took it... I always take things au pied de la lettre. When he said I'm... an unstable character. And I suddenly became excited about the Nazis. I thought, yes, he is an unstable character. He's capable of being a fascist. Capable of anything.
Yes.
That I knew. Well, that's my view. Guy, there's no loyalty in him. I mean,
yes.
He could go from one thing to another. He was completely an unstable character. But, nothing about him would surprise me altogether.
Yes. Did anyone that you told this to dissuade you or attempt to dissuade you?
No. No. Nobody. I don't know who I told it to. I can't have told it to many people. Who did I know at that time in June 1941, almost everyone in Goldenbox? My parents knew.
I must have talked to Jennifer Hart, for example.
I may have done, but I don't remember doing it. I wouldn't have concealed it.
Right.
I may have chatted about it. But nothing we two, I didn't say Burgess coming with me on something of his own, none of this. I wasn't told not to. But I think I just vaguely as in a dream went on.
Yes.
About a fortnight it all took. And then I remember getting to a train with Burgess, seen off by some MI6 girl who was seen off by. We travelled very comfortably to Liverpool and then we got onto a boat. And I then felt I must tell somebody what I'm doing. But I may never come back. Somebody ought to know.
And this was the SS Antonia?
This was the SS Antonia. Before it left home. who was still post letters, told people. And I thought, well, but the Mac or Lionel Curtis in All Souls, I wasn't a friend, but he was a tremendous operator. And there were even on Grease, of first class kind, government departments on Great Intriguer, from British Empire. If I write to him, if he knows, then steps can be taken for retrieving me. If it's necessary, at least somebody can try. So I wrote him a letter. Do I allow him? I'm engaged. I don't really understand where I'm going or what I'm expected to do. I thought I'd better tell you what is happening. We're going to Washington in order that I might get a visa from Umansky. I thought perhaps if anyone to know, you ought, you can tell members of the government should be necessary. But what is happening? I didn't think I could tell you. You're the most sort of politically important person I know, roughly. I don't know what happened to that letter. Well, that letter was intercepted by the censorship. Letters from boats. Even though they were in harbour. Was thought to be, and there it was. And so he was interrogated. He was frightfully displeased. Thought I'd in some way or way compromise him. Yes. Thought it'd be intriguing somewhere.
Yes.
I remember when I saw him later, he was
not happy.
No. Complained. But later when I became important in Washington, he suddenly totally changed his view and said, how clever of me to have written him. He was a time server, if there was one. And then we got on to the boat. There it is now. We did not occupy.
Is this early July?
Middle July.
Mid-July.
We must have arrived end of July, I think. We took about 10 days because we avoided icebergs. Berge and I did not occupy the same cabin. I was in a cabin with a rather interesting man who was an Austrian, a man of Jewish origin, I mean, baptized heavily, who was the head of the economic department of the Austrian Foreign Office he was in the office from the 90s. Pretty old then. He was probably in the late 70s. He died at the age of 102. He was a top economic official of the, and then when the Nazis came, he thought he'd better get out. So he walked across the Alps into Italy. And the Italians arrested him at the frontier, and he then sent a telegram to Mussolini. We knew and dealt with in 30s very happily.
Yes.
And Mussolini said, Benvenuto amico Schuller, that is his name.
Yes.
S-C-H-U-L-L-E-R. So he was admitted to Italy. Then he came to England, and the Foreign Office was very pleased to see him, used him as a friend and might be useful. And then he was sent off to Washington. I don't know, I suppose to help the English in some way, I don't know. I didn't see him after that, ever.
And it's not on this trip that you see Aline on the boat.
Oh, no,
this is a subsequent,
much
later.
No. She wouldn't be on a boat going to England.
That's
you think. And then Elizabeth...
It would be from Lisbon that she would have gone, sorry.
And Lisbon was Elizabeth Bergner, Lord Strathallan, now Lord Perth, became quite a friend. He was being sent as a semi-president attaché to Washington because he had an American wife, for whatever reason. I knew one of them, met around two people.
Yes.
A couple of queers.
But you didn't discuss your mission further with Guy on the boat, did you?
No. The mission was clear. President attaché in Moscow. There's no...
And what did Guy say about his mission?
Not a word.
Not a word.
Nor did I ask. I knew he was a spy of some sort. MI6. I knew what that meant.
Yes.
I wasn't going to ask him what he was going to do with that. He obviously wanted to get there, and I was the cover. And there was a tiny plot by him. Sold successfully to all these worthy men. Let me now interpolate the following proposition. Every job, Guy, not quite every job, nearly every job that Guy ever got, certainly from some date in the 30s, was arranged for him by Harold Nicholson, who remained a loyal friend throughout. on presumably Homintern grounds. And no doubt he found him a agreeable company,
yeah.
As they all did. I mean, certainly this was. But later, too, when he came back, get that end of the story in a moment.
We'll get that, yeah.
Yes. And everything, he went on corresponding with him in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And that's in his diaries, you'll find an account of, I think, dining with Burgess and me in some restaurant after we all came back.
Yes.
And,
what happened? So you arrived in New York in early August 1940.
Late July or early August. Now, we arrived
in the Shoreham Hotel.
None of that. It's all much later. Mm-hmm. We're in Quebec. From Quebec, we took a train to Montreal. From Montreal, we took a plane to New York. In New York, we stayed 2 days for some reason, and Guy went to see Michael Strait.
Yes.
Who I knew nothing about.
In Arlington, Virginia.
No, I think in New York.
In New York. He was by then married.
Can't tell you, right? And I knew very little about him, really. I met him once or twice. But he was obviously an agent, too.
Yes.
And the natural person waiting to go. How I knew him. Then I'm going to see Michael Strait.
How did you know Michael?
I didn't.
But you know who he was?
Yes, I knew he was. Vaguely. He was Cambridge with him. Maybe Guy told me. I think it was new to me, no. I don't think I did know. Till he told me about him. I'm not told that much. Maybe I knew there was a character like that in Cambridge. Maybe I didn't. That I can't tell you. Comparatively unimportant. And I went for 2 days. I thought, now the man I'd like, the only man I know in America, is Felix Frankfurter. So I rang up his office in New York, in Washington. So already by this time, Supreme Court. He came to Oxford twice, then and also later in the 30s. And we were terrific friends. And they said, no, he's a place called Heath, Massachusetts. And I said, well, we arrived on a Saturday, and Mr. Schuller told me, don't go and see the embassy on Sunday. No embassy likes that. So I thought, oh, well, all right. I'd never seen New York. I thought I might stay for 2 days, look around. No hurry. And then I went to Heath. He said, oh, come here at once. Loves you. In Heath, I met him, Reinhold Niebuhr, and Archie MacLeish.
Both for the first time?
So, totally. And Niebuhr asked me a question of what I was doing, and I explained I was going to Moscow. And he said, oh, well, I know Cripps very well. I'm going to tell him it's right to go awfully good. He took to me in a big way. He chatted away, and I thought he was an awfully nice man, which he was. And I'll write to him, I'll tell him. Truly lucky to have you. Would you like to write to him? He did. From then, disasters began after that. And then I stayed in New York for 2-3 days, and then to Washington, where I knew John Foster.
Yes.
Who was my colleague at Hotels.
Yes.
Great friend.
Now at the embassy.
Now at the embassy, legal advisor. And Guy Burgess, we also knew, great friend of the Rothschilds. We stayed together. Next day, Joe Holthorpe, my friend, came to lunch. And I took to him and he took to me. He loathed Burgess. Partly because he wasn't wearing socks.
That was the first time you met Holthorpe.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That was in...
And Burgess wasn't wearing socks.
Apparently not.
And did Holthorpe comment on that?
He certainly did, yes. He's the commented on to me. Your friend. And so on. And we got on very well. And I stayed, I suppose, for about, I don't know, began staying there. And something had been done
where, sorry?
With John Foster.
With John Foster.
Georgetown.
Yeah.
The question arose about my visa to Russia. How can I get rid of Umansky? That Burgess couldn't help with. So, then, about 3 days later,
Didn't Burgess need a visa?
Must have had one, I didn't ask. Next, I was told that Maisky no good. I didn't press again about it. You're right, I might have asked. Can't think why I didn't. Well, what happened then was that about 2 days later, he was recalled from London.
Burgess was recalled.
Yes. He was very displeased. irritated by this. Didn't know what it meant. He couldn't do anything else. By his office. Presumably by the Secret Service or where he's working for. I said, will you come back too? He said, no, I don't. See, why? You've got your job. I've got my job to do. Not connected. I propose to continue to Moscow, if I can. I didn't quite see why I should come back. I have not been sent for. Not very pleased. But he did go back. Then I remember...
And did you see him, just to complete this, Bridget, did you see him after August 40?
In my life?
Yeah, no, in the next... during the war. Did you see him again in London?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. I saw him, I think at least twice. I saw him not very much, but I did see him. I saw him immediately after I came back from America, which was October 1914.
Yes.
And I think he knew that, or I rang him up, something happened. And he and I had a Nicholson lunch together.
Yes.
And Harold Nicholson describes this.
Which is in Nicholson's diary.
You'll find it. Probably about then. And up to nothing. By that time, he's already been appointed to BBC. BBC is the news department. Well, I then had to get this visa. I'm not telling you the story at great length. And Ben Cohen was a friend of Alcott and a friend of Frankfurter. And they said he works for the Department of Interior. He seems to have dealings with the Russians. Would you like... So I was introduced to him, made friends with him. Very noble, good character. And he knew Umansky because they were the Interior Department under Ickes, was dealing with the Russians about Great Diomede and Little Diomede islands between Alaska and Kamchatka.
Yes.
And, so he said, yeah, if you would like to meet, well, I think I can arrange it. Good? Because I asked the embassy if they could do anything. They said no. Well, on no terms, the Russians. I was puzzled by the whole thing. It already seemed a bit odd to me. So I did go to lunch with Ben Cohen. No, with Oscar Chapman, who was the Undersecretary of the Interior. The United States, present being